Okay, so if you bring down the loops combo, etc., and unzip it, there's a place in there called VBNet CIS56. And if you go to loops and then muffins, we're going to look at that first, and then we're going to go back and look at the faculty ones. So here's the muffins one. And as I said, we looked at something about muffins, but also this one has a little bit more. Okay, first of all, this is a checklist box. Okay, so if you look over at that box, it is a checklist box. And what happened to this? I think I want to move it. Well, apparently it doesn't want to move. Right click. I would like to move this. Ah, just wanted me to talk to it. There, I moved it. Okay, so that is a checked list box. Last time we looked at plain list boxes, this is a checked list box. And then I have quantity, a discount for a dozen, calculate, and then I got a summary going on here. So if I run this, and I okay, so there's the checklist box that I talked about. So I've got a bunch of these that I can check. Okay. So if I check poppy seed, blueberry, and cranberry, again, I was too lazy to allow for quantities different, so I'm getting two of each. Okay. And then I say calculate, and it tells me how much is owed, $470. Okay, then I'm going to clear. And the next one, I'm just going to have a cornmeal and a blueberry. And the quantity is just going to be one. And I will calculate. Oh, actually, I just did cornmeal. So it's just cornmeal. Okay. Then I can clear it again, and this time I'll do cornmeal, bran, poppy seed, and I'll do four of each, and I therefore deserve the discount for a dozen, and that's something the clerk has to put in. I didn't have it go automatically and do the calculation. So I'm saying calculate, and that comes up at 10:56, and then I clear, and then one more. And that comes up at 760. Now I'm doing a summary. And the summary comes back and tells me that the highest sale was 1026 and the average sale was 604. So I am coming back and getting the summary information for my day at the muffin shop. I think that came up, but I'm going to take a picture again. No, apparently I'm not. Here we go again.
Chris just said that.
Yes, it let me. Okay, so let's take a look at the code for that. Okay, first of all, on load, I loaded in the five, so four muffin checkbox list load. Okay, so this is my load, and in this case, I said checklist box, CLB, checklist box muffin item there, and I added those five things to the list box. Okay, so those are my five things that are there. And those are done once when the form is loaded. Okay, done once when the form is loaded. Then I have my calculate down here. And I went through a loop. And I'm saying for zero to the count,
Okay, so I can again look at the CLB muffin items, and this time I'm doing a count. I'm counting how many there are.
And remember, in programming, the tendency is to count starting with 1, but to index starting with 0. So that's why I have the minus 1 there. I want to go from 0 to the count minus 1. Okay? So, if one of the things is checked, and I'm going through and looking at each one of them in a row, because I'm going to look at the zeros one, and then the first, and then the second, then the third, then the fourth. And if it's checked, then I'm going to take the amount O and add to it the quantity times 95 cents. And all my muffins cost 95 cents. So I'm saying take and add to work amount due the result of multiplying quantity by 95 cents. Okay? So I do this for each one. So if 3 are checked, it's going to do 3 calculations. The other things, it's not going to get a yes to the if, so it's not going to do the calculation. Okay. Now I did this using a 4 next. So I have my 4 next as my thing that I use for a loop. Okay, then I said, okay, if the radio button that was about discounts is checked, then take work amount and multiply it by the discount. Okay? And put it back. So the discount is you only have to pay 0.9. The discount is actually 0.1. But it's easier to not multiply and then have to subtract. It's easier to say if the discount is 0.1, then I'm just going to multiply it by 0.9. Okay? And that gets me the discounted amount. Then I said, if the work amount owed is greater than the highest sale. Now, the first time through, highest sale is going to be 0. So it is going to be greater. So the first time through, it will take and put amount owed in as the highest sale. From that point forwards, there will be something in highest, and it compares to highest. And if this particular sale is bigger than highest, then I put the result of this sale in as the highest. So the highest can change if I sell more. So at the beginning, again, at the beginning, I am going to hit this and it's going to be work amount owed greater than 0 because there's nothing there. So it takes work amount owed and puts it into work highest sale. Then the next calculation that I do is going to come through, and if the amount owed is greater than the highest, then it will do the put this amount owed in the highest. If it's not, then it does nothing. It just keeps what was there. And then I dropped down and said, okay, format it for currency. And then take work total, which I am keeping, and add the amount to it. Because I need to have work total in order to figure out the average. So I'm saying take work total and add this sale. Work amount owed is this sale. Add this amount, this sale, to work total. And also keep track of, I kept track of customers, but what I'm basically keeping track of is sales. How many customers have bought something. And I need those two numbers to calculate the average. Because when it's all done, I'm going to divide my total of all my sales by the total number of customers or the total number of sales and get my average. Questions on any of this? Because this is starting to get more interesting. You know, you're doing something and having to think through how to do it. It's a little more interesting.
I have a quick question.
Yep.
The only part that's...
You never ask anything but quick questions. any lies. It's frequently an awkward. But
now,
anyway,
this should be a quick one. The only part that's technically the loop is just from for to next, right? Like,
that's
all
right.
Of just if statements.
Yeah.
Okay.
The rest is every time I click the calculate button, I do this routine. Mm-hmm. And the routine has a loop, and this was using a for next loop. The routine has a loop in order to check every muffin and see whether it was checked. And then once we've done that, we're going to go on with figuring out, does it deserve a discount? Is it the highest sale? And add it to my totals. So you're right. The only part of the loop there is a for. These examples that we're looking at are kind of a mixture of fors and ifs. Or they may miss out on one of the other of them. Yeah.
And the minus one again?
The minus one is because the count is real. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The index is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So if I had five things there, and so the count is going to be 5. But the index starts at 0, so I want to go 0, 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
If I tried an index of 5, it's going to crash on me because these have an index of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
Okay? And so that's the problem that we have in programming, is the count and index aren't in sync with each other. So we find ourselves doing that minus 1 stuff a lot when we're doing count. And then button clear, I have another loop in there for button clear, and that loop is saying set item check state unchecked. So count is going to go from 0 to 4, and it would have been better if I had it go from 0 to count and done that again. But this time I cheated since I knew the 1 and 4, and I say go from 0 to 4. So I'm saying set the item check state to count unchecked. So whatever which one count is pointing to, make it unchecked. This is my big complaint about Visual Basic. They have a load of things, but come on, I'm really going to remember set item check state? You know, unless I'm doing it all the time, am I really going to remember that? So I've got to keep going and looking up these phrases that I have to use. And as I said, that's my big complaint about Visual Basic, is there are so many of these that are not intuitively I would remember them. And then the last thing down here is I went in and, one thing. Apparently I plan to use a checked index for something and I have no idea what it was that I was going to use it. It's no problem if I define something and then don't use it, but it does give me that little green ziggy warning thing to tell me that this has never been used. Okay. So it doesn't do any harm. See, unused local variable. So it's telling me that this has never been used. And that's fine. I obviously thought I was going to do it one way, changed my mind and did it some other way. And so therefore, I never used that and I never deleted it. Okay. And now I know it's there, but I leave it just so I'll say this that I'm saying. Okay. Then we come down to the bottom, and we said, okay, I want to format highest sale as currency. Then I want to have work new line, which is character 10, which will bring me down to a new line. And then I said, okay, if work customer count is greater than 0, because if it's not, then I have no data to summarize, okay? But as long as work customer count is greater than 0, I take the work average and divided, or work total rather, and divided by work customer count to give me work average. Then I format that average for currency, and then I get ready to write out my message. And my message that I'm going to put up with a message box is work message string is going to have a highest sale, and then I'm continuing on the next line, so the underscore does that line. And then I said, take the formatted version of the highest sale, concatenate that with the work line, concatenate that with the average sale, concatenate that with the currency version of the average sale, and then put it out in the message box. And this time I use just plain message box. I usually use message box show when I'm doing the fancy ones and use message box for debugging. But this time I use just the plain message box. Questions?
Format currency, is that still in use, or is that from the old?
No, the other version would be a better way of doing it, the C.
String C.
Yeah. But that isn't, and in fact, I'm wondering if this was written before the whole message box.show was there. But as you can see, it runs fine. They're upward compatible. So I can take this that runs, and, you know, it runs fine in 17. So yeah, certain things like that would probably be better to fix. Go back on format currency and change it to the string C. But if you look it up, I suspect that it hasn't been deprecated. Okay, any other questions? You know, what I'm hoping is you're getting to a point that you'd be comfortable writing something like this. Okay, so now we're going to look at one of the faculty ones, and it doesn't really matter which one. I'm trying to remember which would be best. Let's do faculty courses, maybe. As I said, I can't remember which is which. Now, this is basically the same program with some bells and whistles on it to make it work different ways. So I started out and I've got these boxes, okay? This is called a combo box. Okay, so I've chosen here a combo box. I don't remember which one this is. Okay. And there is where I have set that up. So in the combo box, I went over to items collection. And I set up the three things that I wanted there. So I went to items collection, and I set up the three things that I want in the combo box. I think I just took that picture a third time, but anyway. Then this one is a combo box as well. And this one has the courses set up in it. So this has a bunch of courses set up in it. Okay? So it's another kind of combo box, and it's got the courses set up in it. Okay, drop-down style. This one has a drop-down style. If I go back up to this one, it has a drop-down style of simple. Okay.
And so you can choose the style. Once you've decided you want a combo box, you can choose the style. In one place I did the simple, and one place I did the other.
Both of them, I set up the content in the collection. And your book has a bunch of stuff about combo boxes. I think it's a good idea to just read your book along through, but also I think one of the nice things about the book is that it's a reference. And the online Visual Basic is not the best reference in the world. So that's why I recommend that you have a book in this course. Okay, so now I'm at Add Course. Okay, and if you notice, when I went back there, there's three buttons. One that says Add Course, one that says Clear, one that says Exit. Okay.
So, I now have the CBO semester selected index changed. CBO semester selected index changed. Okay, so let's see what that causes to happen.
So now we're looking at events other than the click event and the load event. We've looked at click events, we've looked at load events.
Now I'm saying I want, when the selected index changes, I want to do something. Okay?
So if I run this, and I'm going to pick spring, and see what happened? It wrote this down here.
The selected index was changed because I picked spring. It now says courses for the spring semester. Okay, it took whatever I had in there. And then I did another add. I did that as an add in the items. I did another add, and the other add is simply writing a blank line. Then I said, okay, enable this button. If you noticed at the beginning, I should have pointed it out, that button was not usable.
It's not usable until I choose a semester. Okay? And we'll look at that. But this Add Course button at the beginning was not clickable. It was faded out.
Now I've enabled it, and so it will now work. Okay? So now I can choose a course.
So I've got a bunch of courses up here that I put in the collection. Come on, you can do it. So I'm going to pick Oracle and say Add Course. And apparently it thinks I want to add it twice, so whatever I did with my mouse. Then I pick... This mouse is going to drive me crazy. And we'll go with Visual Basic. And I've now got Visual Basic in there. And now I'm done.
Okay, so they're taking two versions of Oracle and one of Visual Basic. Now, when I'm done and I click the clear button, it says, list courses items clear, and then CBO semester reset, and then CBO courses reset. Okay. So this list box get cleared out, and these get reset to the things that I put in the collection.
OK. Okay. Now, one of the things that comes up on this one is the CBO selected index change. If I wanted to do it on something else, that's semester. So I'm going back over here to design, and I'm going to just pick this for whatever reason. I picked that. Then I come over to the Windows form, and I pick that events, and it looks like a slash of lightning. So I pick that events, and it comes up with a whole bunch of events that I can associate with that. Okay, so it comes up with, if you see selected index changed, that's what I did when I did the one up at the top. I clicked on this, and I clicked on that, and I clicked on selected index changed, and you can see how it has filled it in. Okay, because I clicked on that and said that's what I want you to create one of those. Okay. So that's how you can go about creating, is going through this lightning rod and then picking something that is associated with something you have on the form. At some point when you're home doing something, play around with that a little bit and see how it works. And your book goes through that too. Okay, so that's how this one worked. Again, both of these had stuff that I got from the collection. Okay? Both of those had stuff that I got from the collection. Okay. Questions? No questions? I just charge on, folks. Okay. File. Close solution, file, open, and I'm going to go to user entry. So there are multiple ways to get information into these list boxes, and one of them is what we just used, looking at collections. The other one is to have user entry so that the user keys in what they want in these boxes. Okay? So if I start this one, it doesn't have anything in the boxes, but it comes up with enter semester, wonderful. End of the semester, done when finished. So I'm going to again put in spring. Comes out, and I'm and I'm saying done. Now it says end of the course. So, being basically lazy, I'm going to say CIS 120. CIS 122. CIS 150. CIS 156. CIS 256. So I've put in five of them. And now I'm done, so I click done. So now I've got spring, and notice, by the way, the button is not active. The Add Courses button is not active. Okay. Then when I click on spring, and I could have put all those semesters in, it's now come up and said courses for the spring semester. And then I can click on 150, add course. 156, add course. 122, add course. So I can add whatever courses that I want. But in this case, I had user input coming in. And there are times when you want that. There are times when you can hard code the collection into the program, but there are times when you want the user to put in the data that you're going to use for this run. Okay? You know, my husband had a jewelry company that was a client of his at one point, and the price of gold was changing rapidly. And so they kept calling him to go in and fix it because it was hard-coded in the program they had and that he had inherited. And so he got in and fixed it. And he said, guys, you know, you're going to save a lot of money if you let me change this so you get to input the price of gold right before you run the program, as opposed to calling me to come in and do it. And finally he convinced them that that was worth it. And so they put in the user entry. And I always think of that as a good one of how you have to enter just before you run, because you needed to know the price of gold just before you were running. Okay. So this is how I did that. On load, I put up the user entry input box, end of the semester, done and finished. And then I said, do while user entry is not equal. Notice the less than and greater is a way of saying not equal. When it's not equal to done. Okay? And so whatever they entered, I then added to the box, to the items list. And then I put up another, and it went back to the top of the loop, and as long as they didn't enter done, they could enter in another season, and it kept looping through like that. When they finally entered done, then it dropped down to this one that said input box and a course, and the done one was finished. And I looped through that, letting them add multiple courses. And when they had added multiple courses and were done, they typed in done, and that ended that. And so there they now had the semester and the courses in the boxes. Okay, so in the first one, they did it by just typing in the collections when they wrote the program. In this one, they are getting user input to fill the data. Now, the other one is, the last one I said a refresh down here. On this one, I set the button clear to -1, because apparently if it's -1, it then goes in and clears things out. So I set that to -1, and it went in and cleared it out. So either of those are ways that you can do it. The reset that I did on the last one, and this -1 that I did here.
Would just regular clear not work in that instance?
Just regular clear, yes, it doesn't. Unless they changed it, feel free to try, but it didn't when I wrote this. So I'm closing the solution. And the third version of that is course setup. And this one is also hard-coded, but instead of hard-coding it in the properties collection, I hard-coded it here in load. So I basically put all the things that I wanted to put in during the load. Okay, so one of them hard-coded it in the collection, and this one is hard-coding it in the load. Okay, so you've got two ways of doing that.
You can set them all up right here in the load, or you can go to the collection and set them up. And it's your choice which one you want to do. But that's the only difference that I did here, is I just set them all up in the form load.
And it's snowing, guys.
You just noticed the snow when
we walked in? I just noticed. It's now white enough so that I noticed. Okay, questions? Okay, those were the four that I wanted to look at there. Now, before we do other things in this, kind of which order to do what, I want to go to notes, handouts, and presentations. And inside there, I want to go to minor, intermediate, and major break logic and processing. And it's a PowerPoint. And there's a summary up above it, notes on breaks. What breaks are is you can put your data in a particular order and then break on some field. So if you sort your data by department, you can break every time the department is changing. Can everybody find this all right, by the way? You can click on this and break every time it changes. Okay? So, to start out with, I have this. So I have data. And my data has a division, a branch, and a department. Okay? These are called minor for the department, intermediate for the branch, and major for the division. And if you have four, then you've got to have two intermediates or two minors or whatever you want to call it. So what I want to do here, my goal, is I want to process this data. And when the department changes, I want to write a department total. Then when the branch breaks, I want to write a branch total. And then when the division breaks, I want to write a division total. Okay, so that's my goal. And there's a lot of reports that follow this model, of where you give somebody, and you may not show them the details, you may just show them the totals, okay? Or you may show the details. But there's a lot of totals that are made this way. Okay, so the next slide shows the result. Actually, I'm not sure I took a picture. Okay, so this has total for department 12, and then there was a total for department 15, and those were the only departments in branch 10. So then I got a total for branch 10. Department 17 was the only one in branch 20. Department 22 was the only one in branch 21, and now I've got a total for the division. Okay. So I went ahead and made the totals for all of these. Okay. So I'm going down and kind of showing there how it broke. Notice that when the department changes, a total is written for the department. And then, if there's a branch break, you also write the branch, but you write them in that order, department and then branch. And if it was a division too, it's department, then branch, then division. Okay. The logic for this.
I have a main line that used initializing, processing, and wrap up. In my initializing, I open my files and process my date. Then I get to processing, and I read the first record. Okay? And then I move the division, the branch, and the department to hold areas, because I need something to compare to. How do I know if it's changed if I can't compare? So I move it to a hold area. Okay? As long as I've got more records, I keep doing the loop. And we'll look at the loop in a minute. And I keep doing the loop over and over and over again. When I don't have any more records, I write out the last minor total for department, the last intermediate total for branch, and the last final total for division, and then last total for major or division, and then the final report. Okay, so the final for everything, and that's what I write out. Okay. Now, notice I read the first record, which I frequently do. We talked about that in 120. That is the initializing read, just to prime the pump and get something started. What we're going to find is when we go and look at the loop, the last sentence in the loop is going to have me read the next record.
So I'm going to go and look at the loop. And there's the loop. And you're going to have to wait till the next page to see the read, because the B indicates I'm not done. So, in the loop, if the division is not equal to the whole division, that means the division has broken or changed. So I write out the minor routine, the intermediate routine, and the major routine. I write out a total for department, branch, and division. If the division is the same, then I check and see if the branch broke. And if the branch broke, I do the minor and the intermediate for department and branch. And if the branch didn't break, and again, I'm comparing it to the hold that I put it in, the first record that I read, I put stuff in the hold area. If the branch didn't break, then I check and see if the department broke. And if the department broke, I do the minor total. Then no matter whether there was a break or not, I want to now go on. Because if there was no break, I just want to process the record. If there was a break, I want to process the record that caused the break. I've now put out the totals, but there was a record that came in that didn't match one of the hold areas. And I want to process that record that caused the break. So continuing on at B, what I do is I say, do the detail processing and then read another record. Do the detail processing, read another record. Do the detail processing, read another record. And the detail processing, I was writing this on paper, so if I needed a header, I went and did the header routine. If not, I set up the detail line. I wrote the line. And then I added to all of the totals. Okay? I added to all of the totals. So if a break happened, I'm now hitting here and I'm adding to all the totals. If no break happened, I'm still hitting here and adding to all my totals. So I'm adding to all my totals. Every record is being added to my totals. And then my total routines are always, in the case of the department, a minor. I set up the line, I write the line. Then I move the department to the hold, because the record that caused the break has the new department in it. And I move that to the hold.
and I set the minor or department total back to zero. If there was an intermediate break, I set up the intermediate or branch line, I write the branch line, I reset the branch in the branch hold, and I reset the branch total to zero. And if there's a major, I do the same things. The final routine is simply set up and write the final routine. I don't have to reset anything because I'm all done. Now, interestingly enough, this flowchart is probably one of the oldest things that I have. It was written for a COBOL program that I did at one point. When I was teaching COBOL, I wrote it. And that, you know, the names of the things, the B320, B330, are very much kind of going along with COBOL. But the logic in it hasn't changed. It's just fine. You know, I could write this in COBOL. I can also write it in other languages. So the logic of looking at what happens in a break product program is just fine, so I've never gone back and changed it. Because A, I'm lazy, but B, there really isn't any need to, because the logic is just fine. I have a header routine, and my wrap-up is simply closing the files. And then once we go to this point, we're stopping because that's showing how to write it in COBOL. But I wanted you to look at the logic. Okay. Then if you go back over under programs, under VBNet, break and validation code. Okay, so there is a program there for break and validation code. And the one I want, when you get there, click on breaks. And the one that I want is PRMIM, for our primary, minor, intermediate, major. PR minor is just department breaks. It's nothing but a department break. PRMIM is minor, intermediate, major. So it's the logic that we were just looking at. So first of all, I'm reading a file. And my file is set up, and it's got a name of MIM text. And I am putting in here, in the form load, I'm putting open that file. File open one means the first file to open, first device. MIM text is the name of it. Open mode is for input. In other words, I want to read it, so my open mode is for input. Okay.
So if I run this, and I click on process, it shows me the first record.
Now, I wrote this right now so that I have to click for every record, and we'll see how that works. And for homework, I'm going to ask you to modify this program and make it automatic, so that I hit a button and the whole report gets generated, as opposed to click, 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 click. And I'll put that up tomorrow.
So here, when my button process happens, I click.
And I have a work area where I'm storing the division number, the branch number, the department number, and the amount. Okay? So I am bringing them in, and I use input 1.
So I use input 1 to bring them in. Okay, so I'm saying I want to input. Now what it is, and we're going to talk more about files on Thursday, but what it is input, and then that will only read one field.
That will only read one field. And if you go back to the PowerPoint, you'll see all those fields
on the PowerPoint. We can actually also see them here.
I have a quick question.
Yep.
Why does it have like the warning thing under those?
Yeah, I was actually wondering the same thing. As a matter of fact. Because I certainly seem to be using them. Is being passed by reference? Not really. Okay. And I don't want to get into pass by reference, etc., because we're going to get there, but... Huh. But it is working, right? I hit process, and there's my department total. Okay, so it's working. I will try to figure out. I actually, when I opened this,
I ran this at home, but I was on a different version of VBAtech. And I don't remember seeing those green things. But I didn't run it on 2017. I think I ran it on 15.
And maybe I just was oblivious. But I don't remember seeing them. But I know it's working.
So this one, basically, when I say input 1, it got the division number, then the branch number, then the department number, then the work amount. Okay? And the work amount, when it's being put out, is formatted.
So you come in, and you keep going with processing, and it keeps reading the records, and then it finally hits end of file. And it comes up with a flag saying end of file. So it comes up with that flag. Okay, so if we go back and look at this, and this was on my E drive, I think. And there is the file. Okay, there's the file that I'm reading. And notice where it was. It's in the bin. Come on. It's in the bin for the program.
So when I save the file, and we'll go over this, as I said, more on Thursday. But when I save the file, I saved it into the bin associated with the program.
So that's where it's reading.
And it read the first record, the 3, 24, 27, 500. And I put them all in the string, so that's why they're in quotes. Okay.
So that's the data file. And so when you come over here and look at the input, it's reading first the division number, then the branch number, then the department number, and then the amount. So it's reading them as separate reads, rather than reading the whole record. It's reading it as separate reads. Now, in your book, and later on, we'll get into a more sophisticated way of handling files, but this is the keep it simple, stupid approach, which I'm very partial to. If I've got a simple file, just being able to simply read it is a wonderful thing. Okay, so we're looking at that. When end of file is hit, it has a marker, so I can ask in here, not end of file. And if it is end of file, I put out that message box that you saw that said end of file. Okay, so that's the file. So I said in button process, read the record. If I can't read it, it's all the way down here where I put out the message and a file. I've got ifs within ifs here. But if you come all the way down here, I put out the message box that says end of file. And after it says end of file, then I write out the last department for the last department, the last total for the last branch, the last total for the last division, and I write out my final total. Okay. So go back and look at the logic. It says, okay, if work whole division is empty, then all of them are empty. And so take and put work division number into work hold, branch number into branch hold, department into department hold. From here on, I want to change it when a break happens. But for the beginning, I want to get them all set up with the information on the first record. Now, there's a bunch of ways I could ask that, but I asked it is, if the division was empty, then put them in. Okay? So then I came down and said, okay, if the whole division is not equal to division number, obviously, for the first record, it's going to be equal because I just made it equal a second ago. Okay? So on the first one, obviously, they're all going to be equal. And I'm going to drop down out of all of these ifs. And I'm going to say, here, write out the line. And there's the line that I'm writing out. And then I add to all the totals. If a break happens, then I go back up and I am ready to write out my totals. Remember the flowchart. I wrote out my totals, then I reset the appropriate hold areas and reset the appropriate totals where I'm adding stuff to it. Okay? So I'm resetting the hold areas for all three if the division's not equal. For just two of them if the branch is not equal. For just one if the department's not equal. After I write out that total and reset things, I still drop down and process the record. It caused no break or caused a break. Either one, but I process the record down here. Okay. If I didn't want to give them the record, then I just leave that part out. I'd still have to do the ads, but I'd leave out the line. So, depending on where people are in the hierarchy chart, they want to see total details or just totals. If they just want to see totals, then I don't write that line. I do everything else the same, but I just don't write that line, and then they get the totals, and that's all they get. Okay. Does Does that make sense? You look like you have questions. Yes, no, maybe? You did.
I lost my question that I was thinking through.
Okay.
I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
I don't have any quick questions for you right now.
And it's too much snow to have a long question.
Yeah.
I'd like you to go over this logic and make sure you understand it at some point. And as I said, one of your assignments is now going to be, and it takes very little to do it, turn this into a loop where when I press the process button, the whole thing appears, as opposed to having to press the process button line by line. I want to press the process button and have the whole thing appear. And that at least forces you to look at the logic.
So the department is...
It is. But at least it forces you to go look at the program when you get home. There's a method to my madness.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around it. So, it was minor, major, and...
Minor, intermediate, major. Department is minor. Okay.
Branch is the intermediate, okay. And division is the major.
Right. So minor is department, inter is branch, and major is division, and then I also want a final total.
So we're essentially just going from, we want to find all three, but if we don't find all three, then we need to hang up.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you look at the data, it depends what breaks. So,
okay. We look for all three first. If we don't find all three, we look for the two. If yeah. If we find all two, then we look for the one.
Right. And
we run that until...
The way that people do it is they test for the bigger one first, because if the bigger one is true, then I got to do all three.
Yeah.
Rather than test for everything. So you test for the bigger one first, and then if the bigger one, if the division broke, then I move from Boston to California or whatever. I move from the Boston division to the California division, so everything's going to be different. And so that means I'll be in the San Diego branch or something in the whatever department. Okay, so when I move it out there, when I move it, if the division breaks, I want to write all three totals. But notice I'm writing them in the order, department, branch, division. And then if the division doesn't break, then I know I've stayed in Boston, but I want to know what city I'm in. Something like that, what branch it is. So I test to see if the branch is the same. And if the branch is not the same, then I write out the department and the branch. Because branch only breaks when department. Now notice these records are all in order. Before you can run break processing, you gotta sort your data. Okay? So that it's in order by division, and then branch within division, and then department within branch. So it's got to be in that order in order for this to work. Because the code to write it, if you were not doing it that way, would be ridiculous, and you'd have to keep all of these accumulators going, and you know, it just, it's out of control. So you sort the data before you start doing it.
And then not to get, because I'm always trying to get way too far ahead without confusing, but I'm assuming down the road that's where your CSV and those types of files are going to take into account, or from the
Sure, if you made files or a table from a database, you can use these to read. Yeah, I mean, I just read a file that I created.
Okay.
So I just sat down and I typed the stuff in and I made a file. Mm-hmm. And, or actually I may have written a program to make the file. I don't honestly remember. I may have written the program to make the file. And we'll look at that on Thursday. We looked at that briefly in 120. When we did Visual Basic, we briefly did a read and write. So that write that we did in 150, I could have used to write this right here, write this table, write this file, whatever. So I could have used that to write it. And now I'm using the very simplistic kind of way of reading.
All right. Once you get past all the variables and try to decipher all that, it's...
No, it's fairly clear-cut and fairly clean, but it's also something that everybody that takes a programming should know how to do, because this is kind of bottom-line kind of code that management likes to see. You know, what were my sales? What were my profits? What were my this? What were my that? Management wants to see those kinds of